Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today. I'm not a Mormon, and I know the story, or at least I know most of the story, and I've actually visited with Mormons, and they carry with them the Book of Mormon at the very beginning of the Book of Mormon. There is a statement there that leads me to believe that Joseph Smith, upon Joseph Smith and his claims to have found the original manuscripts, if you will, the golden plates from which the Book of Mormon was translated, upon that claim and that man himself hangs a lot of the claims, if not all of the claims, of the Mormons' truth claims, their assertions about who Joseph Smith is, how people are saved, what's the nature of Christianity vis-a-vis Mormonism, and their own history, as checkered as it is. Well, apparently the story of Joseph Smith, the Golden Plates, and his translation of the Book of Mormon is undergoing some revision by scholars and other Mormon leaders. We'll find out what it is. Bill McKeever joins us. He's founder and president of Mormonism Research Ministry, based in Salt Lake City. He's author of several books, including, in their own words, a collection of Mormon quotations. He's also written an article in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal titled Problems with the Gold Plates of the Book of Mormon. Bill, welcome back.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing well. As briefly as you can, tell us the standard story of Joseph Smith and the Golden Plates.
Well, most Mormons would tell you that they believe, certainly, that Joseph Smith had a vision called the First Vision of God the Father and Jesus standing above him in the air, and in this vision he was told that all the churches were wrong. A few years later, he has another visitation from an angel who calls himself Moroni. And according to Joseph Smith's history, I'll read it to you from his history, volume 1, pages 33 and 34, he says, this angel called Joseph Smith by name, said he was a messenger sent from the presence of God to me, and that his name was Moroni. He said there was a book deposited, written upon gold plates, giving an account of the former inhabitants of this continent and the source from whence they sprang. He also said that the fullness of the everlasting gospel was contained in it as delivered by the Savior to the ancient inhabitants. Now, even though Moroni makes this announcement to Smith, he doesn't allow Smith to retrieve the plates until September of 1827, or 4 years after this visitation from Moroni in his bedroom years before. And the way the story goes, Mormons do believe that Joseph Smith actually went out and retrieved these plates on the designated date that he was given and brought the plates back to his home and commenced translating the plates from the Reformed Egyptian text of which they were written into the English text, which gives us, of course, the modern-day Book of Mormon. This is how most Mormons understand the story, but a lot of Mormons I have found have never really tried to take that story and even try to recreate it, if you will. And so what I've been doing for the past several years when I go out to the Mormon Miracle Pageant out in Manti, Utah, which is a big outdoor production, a big outdoor play, where various members of the Mormon Church, in fact, hundreds of members of the Mormon Church and the local communities there, get together and they perform this play and reenact different stories from Mormon history and the Book of Mormon itself. So what I've been doing is I've been going out with a set of my gold plates, asking Mormons if they believe that Joseph Smith had gold plates, and if they ever asked themselves how heavy those plates probably would have weighed. And though most Mormons do believe he had gold plates, I get very few Mormons who deny that, they never really think about how would this story look if I tried to recreate it. And therein lies the problem. And this is what I'm trying to do. I'm merely trying to get the Latter-day Saints to think through this story, because most Mormons I know that I have talked to firmly believe Joseph Smith had plates made of gold. And usually when they say yes to that, I'll ask them, well, are you aware of how heavy gold plates probably would have weighed? Many of them never have thought about this. They see the stories of Smith, you know, balancing the plates on his knee, retrieving the plates from the angel with his arms outstretched and things like this, but they never stop to consider just how heavy would those plates have been. And therein is the fun. Because once I explain to them that gold weighs about 1,204 pounds per cubic foot, and the size of the plates, according to Joseph Smith, would mean that the plates were 1/6 of a cubic foot, doing some simple mathematic equations, we find out that these plates, if made of gold, would have weighed around 200 pounds. Therein lies the problem for the Latter-day Saint, because according to the story, Joseph Smith, when he retrieves these gold plates in 1827, claims that he takes the plates out of the ground and he wraps them in a linen frock and then tucks them under his arm and starts to head home about 3 miles away, carrying these 200-pound plates under his arm. And, of course, Mormon apologists have come to realize that that story sounds a little too far-fetched. And so what they've been doing in recent years is they've been trying to revise the story and make the plates of a more manageable weight so that the story becomes more believable. But in doing so, they have to reconstruct how the story has been told through the years and how the Mormon membership has actually understood the story.
Okay, so it really comes down to a simple matter of physics, really. And even the Mormons themselves realize that they're kind of turning Joseph Smith into, he had to have superhuman strength.
Oh, yeah, and many times when I bring this up, and the Mormons will lift my replica, my 10-pound barbell weights, which is only 100 pounds, which is half of the 200 pounds if they were made of gold, the Mormons readily admit there's a problem here. And so they'll do exactly what you said, Tal. They'll say, well, Joseph Smith was a buff farm boy. I hear this all the time. And for some reason, they seem to believe that if you work on a farm, you all of a sudden become like an Arnold Schwarzenegger, I guess. And so I've had some fun with this sometimes, and so when I get a Mormon that'll say that, I'll kind of yell to the crowd, say, hey, I'm looking for a buff farm boy. Are there any buff farm boys out here that could come and demonstrate this for us here? And a couple times I've actually had some buff farm boys come by, because this is a farming community out here where we're at in Manti. And so we get some, and I say, okay, here, come and lift these plates and tell me what you think. And they see very quickly, too, that this is just too much weight to carry. So they will come up with arguments like, well, God gave Joseph Smith supernatural strength in order to perform this task. The problem with this argument, and I try to raise this with Mormons who use this rebuttal, is probably one of the best arguments against the supernatural strength argument is Brigham Young University. Professors at BYU and Mormon apologists at BYU, none of them use this argument. None of them that I have found have ever tried to claim that God gave Joseph Smith supernatural strength. In fact, several of them have conceded that because there are accounts of Joseph Smith carrying the plates around practically nonchalantly, you know, under his arm, that supernatural strength was certainly not necessary, that he was able to manage the weight of the plates quite simply. And plus, you also have to take into account that Emma Smith, Joseph Smith's wife, talks about how she used to move the plates around on the Smith table in order to do her work, I think is the way Richard L. Bushman described it in his book, Rough Stone Rolling. So we have Emma moving the plates around with relative ease. We have the witnesses supposedly hefting the gold plates, and there's no mention of them needing supernatural strength to do that. We have no mention in the Book of Mormon, for instance, how Moroni, when he was a human, you know, years ago when he was still alive, having to need supernatural strength to carry the plates and then ultimately bury them in the ground for Smith to retrieve them centuries later. We have no record of this. And Mormon apologists have had to concede this, that the plates had to be light enough for Joseph Smith to carry relatively easily. And so here's what they're doing now. They know that gold doesn't work. If the plates were really gold, they admit they would have weighed about 200 pounds. There's no argument here. So what they've done is they've not only changed the metal Okay, they've had to change the metal of the plates from gold to a lighter alloy. And one of the metal alloys that they like to use as an argument is what they call tumbaga. It's a Central American alloy. It can have different carat weights of gold. There's no real concrete measurement of how this is done. But they can be probably made mostly of copper and of gold. And you've got to understand, Todd, it's got to have a certain amount of gold in it, because if they were just copper, the copper would not survive being buried in the ground that long. And this is what their apologists admit. I'm not making that up. So there has to be enough gold mixed with this copper in order to prevent what one metallurgist by the name of Reed Putnam says, electrolysis. In other words, the self-destruction of the two metals coming together, and over the period of time, there has to be enough gold to prevent that electrolysis from taking place. Well, so we're still including gold in the equation, but just not as much. But what becomes very fascinating is they also know that gold is very pliable. So there has to be some stiffness to the plates. Otherwise, writing on these plates would be very difficult. Even though the Book of Mormon itself, in the Book of Ether, talks about 24 plates of pure gold. Now, those 24 plates were not included with the plates that Smith claimed to dig up. He actually copied, or Moroni or somebody, copied from them and put them in his collection. But still, they understand that they can't be so pliable, because if you start scratching on that soft of a metal and having the other plates on top of it, it would tend to distort them over use and over years. And so they've come up with this tumbaga argument to give the plates a little bit of strength and also give it a lighter weight.
Well, let's take a break right here. When we come back, some other claims that are made to make the story, the claim of Joseph Smith having found gold plates as the source of the Book of Mormon, more credible. Stay tuned. Did God really create the world in 6 24-hour days? And what difference does it make? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is In the Beginning, God, Creation from God's Perspective. It's written by regular guest Dr. Joel Heck. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase In the Beginning, God by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. In the Beginning, God.
Hi, this is Kate in Japan, and I'm commenting on the program you had about the Unification Church.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
The most important point is to say I love your show and thank you for doing what you do. Bye from Japan.
Old theology, new technology, Issues Etc. worldwide. Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. Issues Etc. issuesetc.org.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The beautiful shoreline, the calming sound of Lake Michigan, the glorious sunrise, the warm June afternoons. This is Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, June 11th through the 14th, 2011. The program? Dr. Paul L. Meyer, professor of history at Western Michigan University and frequent guest on Issues Etc. Hit the topic? The Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity. Dr. Meyer will cover the historical background of Muhammad, the rise of Islam around the world, the beliefs and practices of this world religion, and what its future may hold. In addition, the 4-day, 3-night Luther Hostel includes interesting day trips to area attractions. For details how you can register for Wisconsin Lakeshore Luther Hostel, sponsored by the Concordia Bible Institute on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin, visit the Concordia Bible Institute website at www.concordiabible.org or phone 262-243-4343.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about Joseph Smith, Golden Plates, and the Book of Mormon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Bill McKeever is our guest, founder and president of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Salt Lake City. He is also author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations, and author of a recent article in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal titled Problems with the Gold Plates of the Book of Mormon. You can check out the website for Mormonism Research Ministry. Go to ours, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Bill, so they have this alloy theory that would make the plates lighter. Of course, Joseph Smith makes no mention whatsoever of an alloy of gold. He says golden plates, right?
He does. Well, I should say this. The angel actually calls them plates of gold. Smith describes them as having the appearance of gold. And this is where Mormon apologists, I think, see their loophole, because somehow they are saying that when he says they had the appearance of gold, that that could also mean they merely had the color of gold, but were probably not made specifically of gold. And this is kind of the argument that they're using, and I often respond, well, doesn't gold have the appearance of gold? And if you're going to say it merely means they had a gold color but weren't made of gold, then why did the angel call them gold plates? And why have Mormon leaders down through the years also described them as plates of gold? Well, they don't really, in my opinion, have a real good argument for that, other than they just keep going back to what Joseph Smith said. But let's give them that. Let's just say, well, okay, they were made of an alloy. Can we still get the weight of the plates down to a manageable level? Now, let me read to you what a Mormon apostle by the name of John Witzo said in a pamphlet that he wrote with a man named Franklin Harris called The Seven Claims of the Book of Mormon. He admits, he says this, he says, the plates upon which the Book of Mormon was engraved were made of gold and have been described as being about 6 inches wide, 8 inches long, and 6 inches thick. That's the size that Joseph Smith gave. He goes on to say, a cube of gold, solid gold of that size, if the gold were pure, would weigh 200 pounds, which would be a heavy weight for a man to carry, even though he were of the athletic type of Joseph Smith. This has been urged as an evidence against the truth of the Book of Mormon, since it is known that on several occasions the prophet carried the plates in his arms. It is very unlikely, however, that the plates were made of pure gold. They would have been too soft and in danger of destruction by distortion. For the purpose of record keeping, plates made of gold mixed with a certain amount of copper would be better, for such plates would be firmer, more durable, and generally more suitable for the work in hand. If the plates were made of 8-karat gold, which is gold frequently used in present-day jewelry, and listen to this very carefully, he goes on to say, and allowing a 10% space between the leaves, the total weight of the plates would not be above 117 pounds, a weight easily carried by a man as strong as was Joseph Smith. Now, this story is fascinating because he gives it this arbitrary 10% air gap in between each of the plates. And he argues, as do most modern Mormon apologists, that the plates, because they are handmade, would not be perfectly flat like we see sheets of metal at our local hardware store, like a, you know, Home Depot or whatever. So he's allowing for a 10% air gap. Now, notice he says that if they had a 10% air gap, the weights would have been probably around 117 pounds. Now, I find this interesting because I volunteer down at Sandra Tanner's bookstore, at the Utah Lighthouse Ministry bookstore, and Sandra has a replica set of plates made of lead that were made for her. And her lead plates, and lead being lighter than gold, weigh 118 pounds, or 1 pound more than this weight that is given by Mormon apostle John Witzo. These replica plates sit on a pedestal in the bookstore, and of course, people coming into the bookstore see them, and they want to lift them. And I've watched this over and over and over again over the years, where people come in and they'll ask if they can lift the plates. I say, sure, go ahead. I says, just be careful, use your legs, okay? And they will go to lift the plates, and usually what happens the first time is the plates don't move. That's how heavy 118 pounds really is in that small of a size. And I've often been asked, are they bolted down? And I say, no, they're not. And so they'll look at them again, and now they're going to get a firm grip on the base of the plates. And they go to lift them up. And usually now, the second time, they can lift the plates off of the pedestal and get them a few inches off of the pedestal. What does this demonstrate to us? That even 117 pounds or 118 is still not light enough, and it's still not a manageable level, even though John Witzo thought it would be. In other words, they haven't reenacted the story. They're using mathematical equations, and they're trying to figure out ways of understanding this. But when you have plates that small, 6 by 8 by 6 inches thick, weighing that much, it even feels heavier when you try to lift them up. And remember, Joseph Smith, according to the story, has to tuck these plates under his arm, and he heads for home. And while he is heading for home, his mother records, in this statement or this recording has been used by several Mormon church manuals, and Mormon apologists have used this argument as well. They will say this, and according to the narrative, that Joseph Smith, when he's heading for home 3 miles away, that he was attacked on three different occasions by men trying to steal the plates from him. And they don't really explain how he could have done that all that well, other than in a recent Mormon Times article, they said, well, Joseph Smith probably set the plates down. And I'm going, really? On all three occasions, he was given enough time to set these plates down in a gentle manner? Because, let's be serious, if Joseph Smith dropped the plates, they would have been ruined. They would have been crushed, even made of tumbaga. They would have been ruined, and he could have never been able to turn the pages because of that soft metal. You know, even though it would have been a little stiffer being made of tumbaga, it would still be a very fragile piece of metal. So Smith has to set these plates down, fight off these attackers, and then grab the plates again, and then take off running. And his mother says, at times, he ran at the top of his speed, carrying the gold plates under his arm, trying to get away from these attackers on three separate occasions. It's just not feasible. It just doesn't make sense. And yet, this is what all Mormons tend to believe, that Joseph Smith was able to do this, carrying such a huge amount of weight under his arm.
Well, the bottom line question here then, Bill, we've only got about 2 minutes here before we got to end our conversation. Mm-hmm. You say this is really a sudden death proposition, that if this story isn't true, Mormonism, with regard to its credibility, is really in trouble. About a minute and a half to explain.
I think they're in trouble because it's the gold plates that give Joseph Smith the status of a true prophet of God in the eyes of many Latter-day Saints. If the story of how he got the plates, how he retrieved the plates, carried them home, doesn't make a lot of sense, I think it behooves the Mormon to start asking more questions like, well, what about the so-called 11 witnesses who claimed they saw the plates? Well, even here we run into problems because if you look at the history of the church, Volume 1, in pages 50 to 53, it says that the three witnesses, at least, in that narrative, saw the plates only in vision. So what did Joseph Smith really have? If he really was carrying something around in a pillowcase or a linen frock, and people saw him doing this, what did he have with him? Obviously, he must have had something that he was telling people were gold plates. But again, remember, they never really saw the plates with their naked eye. They saw them in vision. In other words, they're seeing something that Smith is telling them to see. Mormons need to ask these questions. They need to look deeper into this. And that was the whole point of the article. And the reason why I'm standing out there in Manti is to try to get the Mormons to think a little deeper, to go beyond the faith-promoting material that the church provides them, and actually perform their own little science experiment and see if they can really reenact this tale and see if it's even possible.
Bill McKeever is founder and president of Mormonism Research Ministry based in Salt Lake City. He's author of several books, including In Their Own Words, a collection of Mormon quotations. He's also written an article for the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal titled Problems with the Gold Plates of the Book of Mormon. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you.
Folks, if you like Christian apologetics, providing a defense for the Christian faith and questioning the claims of competing faiths, check out a conference this summer called The Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity. The speaker will be Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Meyer, For more information about this conference, visit ConcordiaBible.org, ConcordiaBible.org, or call area code 262-243-4343, 262-243-4343, the Crescent and the Cross, Islam and Christianity, Sunday, June the 11th, on the campus of Concordia University, Wisconsin. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May is short and sweet, and I think answers a lot of the questions that Christians might be having, especially when their long-held belief, a simple belief in the simple, plain narrative of Genesis chapter 1 and 2 about the creation of the world, is thrown into question by claims of evolution, claims of theistic evolution, maybe even fellow Christians who no longer take those first two chapters of the Bible seriously in their plain and simple sense. It's called In the Beginning, God, by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Joel Heck, Creation from God's Perspective. You can call and order In the Beginning God from Concordia Publishing House. It's only $3.99. Ask for one. 1-800-325-3040 or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss Samson with Dr. Andrew Steinman of Concordia University, Chicago. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.